You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The COVID-19 pandemic has changed the way we work. It's changed the way we socialize, the way we eat. So now that we're eating most meals at home, might our diets actually improve? How are you feeding your family during the pandemic? What recipes are you relying on? And who taught you to cook, by the way? Be part of this hour in the kitchen at 800-642-1234. Ace Champion is a private chef and TV cooking show host. He has Louisiana roots, knows his way around a jambalaya and crawfish etouffee, that's for sure. He's called Green Bay home sweet home for more than a dozen years now. Ace, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. Glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
How are you getting along these days, being at home and the stay-at-home order?
Well, it's nothing new to me. You know, I cook at home about 5 days a week anyway, so another day in the office.
What are you cooking for yourself these days? What meals seem like the right fit right now?
I'm actually been doing a lot of legumes, a lot of black beans, red beans and rice, stuff that, you know, I can make a big batch of it and kind of reheat it the next day for lunch. And, you know, if there's still leftovers, stuff that freezes well, too, as well. Just meals that I can stretch out so I don't find myself cooking literally every single day.
Do you put that over rice? How do you like to do your beans?
Oh, yeah. So red beans is a super legume. So what that means is it has just a ton of, you know, good proteins and good vitamins and stuff for you. And then when you actually put it over brown rice, it transmutes into a complex carb. So it's even more healthier for you. So really healthy, really filling too as well are the type of meals that I like to go through.
All right. So when I did my beans last night for my enchiladas, you know, they came out of a can and I mashed them from there. Do you soak your beans? Where do you start them?
I do. I use the dry beans, and then, you know, you can soak them either overnight, or I recommend at least 2 hours. Soaking them just speeds up the process. You know, normally beans take about 2 to 3 hours to cook. So when you do this, you pretty much knock off about 45 minutes of the cooking time.
Are you an Instapot person? Have you gotten into that?
I am not.
Okay.
I'm not. The people have been asking me, they want me to do the Instapot and the air fryer. And both of them kind of take the fun away from cooking for a chef, you know, for a stay-at-home cook. I think the Instant Pot is an awesome thing. It's kind of an upgrade from your traditional crock pot. You know, you can do a lot more. Just for me, it's just not my thing.
Not into it. So,
yeah.
You know, on the grocery store shelves, lots of pasta is, you know, the aisles are bare in the pasta aisle sometimes. So how do you spice up your pasta, or what can you do to kick it up a notch?
So a lot of times you can use pasta in replace of like a rice dish. Like, you know, I like to make jambalaya quite often, you know, but I'll use pasta instead of rice, you know, maybe make a little sauce to go with it. Pasta is one of those things that you can, you know, make a big pot of it. And then what we used to do in the restaurants is just portion them out into your daily basis. And then kind of use it as you want. And, you know, pasta is also a great thing that freezes well, too. So I think that's why a lot of people are buying the pasta, just because it stretches just so well. And it's just unlimited with the things that you can make with it.
Do you dab it with oil at all when you basically put it back into the refrigerator or freeze it? How do you preserve it?
I do after, you know, for years I used to put oil into the actual water while it's boiling, you know. And then when I went to culinary arts school, they said there was no need for that. It's called ample boil. So basically, as long as that water has got a really strong boil, you know, there's no need to put that. You know, just make sure you give it a good stir once you put the pasta in the water. And then once the pasta's almost done, then I just turn the stove off and let it finish cooking inside the actual water. And this way, I don't have to run water over it to cool it off, which is basically rinsing off all of my salt flavor. And then once that's drained, I just throw a tablespoon of butter and just kind of mix in the butter. You can use oil if you like, but I like to use butter and just let that butter melt in. And then you can put it in a Ziploc bag and use it whenever you want to use it.
Do you salt your water when you boil your noodles?
I don't anymore. I used to salt the water just because that was just traditional and that's what we always did for years. But I'm not a big fan of salt. And, I add so much flavor and spices to the actual pasta sauce. And then, if I'm putting a piece of chicken on there, that has flavor and sauce. So to me, there's really no need to flavor the pasta unless you're just going to do like buttered noodles where the noodles are the star. Then I would salt it a little bit.
Noodles are always a star in our household
I
with our
know,
little ones.
especially if you put some cheese on there.
Oh yeah, now we're talking. Ace champion, private chef, and television cooking show host. He's with us for the hour. What is your favorite restaurant? Have you been able to order food from it while you're staying at home? Are there any dishes you wish you could make yourself or that you need some more inspiration on? How are you stretching your food and ingredients right now? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Ace, what do you think of those subscription cooking services like the HelloFresh and the Blue Apron? What about those services?
Those are nice. I mean, anything that's going to keep you away from the processed food and, eating the fast food every day, I think is a win. Do I think people should be cooking a lot more? Yes, but I definitely understand the workforce and the workflow. I mean, you got people working 50, 60 hours a week. It's kind of hard to do that. So I think it's a really good idea. A lot of those apps and stuff, the food on there is fairly healthy, and really good sources. So I don't have a problem with it.
How effective do you think are these meal kits in helping someone actually learn to cook new meals?
Not at all. Sorry. Not at all. It's almost no, it's definitely more healthier, but it's no different than going to the grocery store and buying a TV dinner that's already made for you. A lot of these meals, they're basically just warming it up in the oven. There's a little bit of prep. I would say if you've never cooked before, you burn water, you're just horrible at it. This is a good stepping stone to get into the kitchen and get used to the flow. But then, there's no better teacher than actually learning how to cook and burning some cupcakes and realizing why you burnt it and just being self-taught. I think that really is what drives that passion to want it, because you need that passion too. You can't just okay, I want to cook. You got to have a reason to want to cook, and with all the health epidemic going on, what better reason to start cooking healthy than it is now?
Well, yeah, you have to learn by doing, and that involves making some mistakes along the way.
Lots of mistakes. I always tell people my biggest teacher was my failures, but the key to is not to look at the failures as negative. A lot of times I see people on Facebook, they burn their pot roast and they're like, oh, I'm so horrible, I never want to do that. And I encourage, I'm a firm believer of the law of attraction. What you speak, you actually attract. So I'm trying to reverse that and say, hey, this is part of the process. When you do make a mistake, though, instead of dwelling on the negative, figure out what you did wrong. As soon as I make a mistake, if I've overseasoned something, I'm visualizing in my head, what did I do wrong? And then I correct that. And then the next time I make it, I might make another mistake, and then I correct that. Well, eventually, all the mistakes go away, and I start to pretty much nail every dish that I make.
Ah, and then that's when we just can't get enough of your food. We're cooking.
Exactly.
We are cooking with Green Bay chef Ace Champion at our side. Who is your cooking icon? Is it Julia Child or Rachel Ray, maybe Ina Garten? What did a parent or grandparent influence you in the kitchen? How did they influence you? What are you eating these days? Share what you're making. What recipes could use some Ace inspiration? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Ace Champion here on the Ideas Network. We're in the kitchen here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Since we're all cooking and eating at home more and trying to make fewer trips to the grocery store, we thought, hey, it would be good to get some tips and tricks and Call up Ace Champion. Do you watch any cooking shows? Which ones have you tried on-demand cooking classes on a tablet or a smart speaker? What do you think of food subscription boxes? Do you appreciate meal kits or is it too prescriptive, just not your style? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have private chef and cooking show host Ace Champion who stays with us. So, Ace, how helpful are watching cooking tutorials on, say, YouTube or doing one of these, like, smart speaker tablet things where you can watch and learn at the same time? Is that helpful?
It is very helpful, especially if you're trying to do a specific task, you know, in the kitchen. You know, if you're trying to just learn how to make kombucha or, you know, just something simple like just cupcakes, they really do a good job. Now, I say that with a grain of salt because there's a lot of videos out there that, you know, might not be a good educational tutorial. So what I always recommend is I call it recipe research or video research. So if you're going to want to learn how to make, let's just say, jambalaya, I would recommend watching 2 to 3, maybe even 4 separate videos to kind of get the people's different prospects and kind of take away what you do want and get rid of what you don't want. And in that case, it can be fairly helpful. Although there is a gap, which I've started a new business called Champions Virtual Reality Experience. And that gap is the actual interaction with the instructor. I mean, you're watching a YouTube video and you're like, oh, I have a question. How can you ask that question if it's not live? So other than that, they're really good.
So what goes into your jambalaya? What sets yours apart?
Ooh, yeah. So, you know, obviously I've been cooking jambalaya for years, and it wasn't until I went to culinary arts school that I changed the way I did it. You know, traditionally Louisiana, you put all your, you know, your Trinity mix, your bell pepper, onion, celery, your sausage.
Wait, explain what the Trinity is.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. No, celery, pepper.
I forget where. Yeah. The Trinity is celery, bell pepper, and onion.
Yep.
So that Trinity mix is pretty much in almost all of Louisiana. And dishes from gumbo to etouffee to jambalaya, and it goes on and on and on. So traditionally, you put it all in a Dutch oven, you bake it off for 40 minutes. Well, when I went to college, they told me vegetables should be al dente. What that means is it should just be to the tooth. So it should still have a crunch to it. It shouldn't be, you know, soggy. Well, if you bake peppers and onions for 45 minutes, they're going to be gone. So what you have is a rice dish that looks like rice and sausage. So what I do is I make one, I use wild rice instead of white rice.
Oh, you
so
do?
That's one treat. Yeah. And then I make the rice separately. So in order to really truly get all the components of the jambalaya to come out perfect, you have to cook them all separate. So cook the rice separate till it's perfect. I saute the sausage until I get that nice caramelization on it. And then I saute the peppers and the onions, making sure I season everything along the process. Then I marry it all together. Then you can actually get the crunch of the peppers. You can see the different colors that I use. So the presentation is just amazing. And the beautiful thing about making it this way is then what I do is I put it on a sheet pan if I'm not serving it right away. Put it on a sheet pan, cool it, wrap it with saran wrap, throw it in the refrigerator, and just forget about it until you're ready to serve it. Then when you are ready to serve it, throw some aluminum foil on that, throw it in the oven on around 280, and let it warm up for about 10 minutes, and you're good to go. And this way, you're not trying to cook it. A lot of times, people try and cook the rice and have it ready right before the guests come. And what happens is the rice is still on the stove, it's still cooking, and God forbid you serve your guests mushy rice. I mean, that's almost as bad as mushy pasta.
It is. Yeah. Well, I would assume then, though, that all those flavors melt together when you put it in the refrigerator for a while and kind of let it sit.
Oh, yeah. Just like lasagna, you know, or spaghetti. Let those flavors marinate.
We're talking with Ace Champion. He's a private chef, television cooking show host, and you can join in with your questions about your cooking right now. Do you watch any good cooking shows? Which ones are you learning from? Have you ever tried to replicate something you saw in a tutorial? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Ace, you mentioned you're doing a TV series, cooking classes using video conferencing software. How's that going for you?
Actually, I haven't started yet.
Oh,
Today
okay.
is my debut. So,
well, well.
Yeah. Well, as you know, I have the TV cooking show, Cook Like a Champion. We've been on since 2016. We're actually on about 150 TV networks. We're in 70 countries all over the world, doing really, really well. But like I said, a lot of the followers that do watch my show, they're like, man, I wish I could have asked you this question when I was cooking this dish. So with all everything going on, I decided to create a Champions virtual reality experience. And I call it experience because it's going to be more than just a cooking class. You know, I'm a visual motivational speaker by trait too as well. And I think when you're teaching someone the art of cooking, you need that motivation, that inspiration, because what's going to get someone up, you know, early in the morning to want to cook breakfast? What's going to make someone inspired to want to cook a nice meal after they've worked an 8-hour shift? So you'll be getting a lot of that in this show. And I'm also bringing a lot of elements from my culinary degree. So I'll be teaching people cost control. You know, cost control is basically the average amount that you would spend per meal. You know, so when you're doing all your budget, you know, hey, I got $100 a week to spend on food, and this is how much food I can get with it, and this is what I can do with it. So I'll be teaching a lot of those techniques too as well.
Very practical for the times, for sure. Let's take a call now. Kiri is with us in Lake Mills. Hi, Kiri.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to say, so last year I had the honor, actually the last 2 years, I had the honor of being one of the judges at the Wisconsin Grilled Cheese Championship.
Oh,
and I know Ace was one of my dudes. So I would love to hear Ace share some of the secrets to creating a great grilled cheese sandwich.
Oh, that is so cool.
Awesome. I love Wisconsin. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. It was an honor. That was truly a blessing going up there. Let me say, Dodgeville does not mess around with their cheese. It was a real deal out there. I mean, we were, if you've ever seen an MMA fight, it was like an MMA fight. We were all in the middle. So the secrets to really making a grilled cheese is paying attention to every element, you know, from the butter, you know, make sure you infuse the butter with some type of flavor, to the bread, make sure it's homemade, wholesome bread, not processed bread. The processed bread just has too much sugars in it. And then the ingredients, think outside the box. And that's what I did. I think I won 3 out of 4 awards when we were there because, you know, I did a smoked house grilled cheese mac and cheese. So, I mean, who would think to take that mac and cheese and slap it between 2 pieces of bread, you know? But it actually came out amazing. You know, I also did a dessert one, an apple pie stuffed French toast with the caramel Moscato rum sauce, you know? So now you're talking dessert inside bread. So really just be creative. Whatever you would serve bread with on the side can be stuffed into the grilled cheese. And the last very, very important thing is temperature control. Slow, slow, slow. And I don't put the two breads on the side. I put them on top of each other. So that way you get a good 3 minutes on one side and a good 3 minutes on the other side. So you allow the cheese to slowly melt into the bread instead of, you know, the bread's all burnt on the outside and the cheese is still not, you know, nice and gooey and stretchy on the inside. And make sure you get good cheese that actually stretches and is made for grilled cheese.
Yeah, what are some cheeses that you would recommend?
From Wisconsin, of course. you know, I love to use the specialty cheeses. I think I used a bourbon barrel cracked black pepper from Schulzberg.
Wow.
I also used a salsa jack cheese. I used a Kobe jack cheese. And then for my dessert, I used a Havarti cheese too as well. So when you're trying to pick out your cheeses, you know, if I'm doing well, I just say what pairs well with Havarti or what pairs well with the ingredients that I'm making. And it gives you a little list of suggestion cheeses that you can possibly use. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's your favorite cheeses, trial and error. You know, when I did these grilled cheese, I made a couple of them and some were nailed right off the back and some took a couple of times. So just pay attention to your own taste buds and I know you'll do great.
We were talking about cookware yesterday. When you cook your grilled cheeses, what type of pan do you like to use?
So I always use a nonstick pan. You know, stainless steel will probably burn up on you. And make sure that it's a wide enough pan, and make sure you butter the bread and not the pan. Sometimes people butter the pan, and then what happens is the butter doesn't really coat the bread, so you get these different pockets of not nicely grilled bread, if that makes any sense. So a nice just slow roll electric griddle works perfect if you're trying, you know, you got 10 kids running around the house, you got to whip up 10 grilled cheese. Electric griddle works perfect. Just make sure when you put them on there, you put like a sheet pan over them. And that just puts a little bit of weight onto the actual bread. So you make sure that you get a good sear across the board.
We are in the kitchen this hour with Green Bay Private Chef Ace Champion as our guide. Are you grilling more now? Maybe making those grilled cheeses? Do you prefer a conventional charcoal grill setup? Or maybe you're into the Kamado grills. What do you grill to perfection? How are your marinades doing? Are you ready to branch out? Be part of this 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a moment with Ace Champion right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a quick mention here. As the impact of COVID-19 grows in Wisconsin, you can ask your questions about the disease. We're gathering questions through our Wisconsin project. Submit what's on your mind about COVID-19. We'll do our best to answer it, track it down. Go to WPR.org/COVID. So right now we're in the kitchen with Green Bay private chef and cooking show host Ace Champion. And the reality is that a record-breaking number of Americans are jobless and wondering about their ability to pay bills in the next weeks and months. And that makes every bit of food seem all the more precious. There's also anxiety around food supply disruptions. Where are you at with cooking right now? Do you have items in your pantry? What staple ingredients are you using and stretching? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. And Ace Champion stays with us. So Ace, what are some of those cost-effective ways that we can stretch what we have in our pantry, what we have with produce, what we have with meat? Where can we stretch?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously there's the meal prep thing going on. You know, meal prepping is definitely something that's going to, you know, save you some time. What I recommend, and I always like to tell people, is when you're making a dish, make a bigger batch. You know, if you're a family of three, make enough for a family of six, you know, because then what happens then, you know, you have leftovers for lunch the next day. You know, if you have abundance of leftover chicken, I recommend going on YouTube or going onto my website and checking out an additional recipe. A lot of times people don't like to eat leftovers, which I get. You know, if I had baked chicken on Friday, I don't want baked chicken on Saturday. But you can also take that chicken and make a chicken salad sandwich, or you can
chicken noodle soup.
Chicken noodle soup. There you go. There you go. You know, chicken pasta. You know, you can go on and on and on. So that's pretty much the thing. You know, it get things that are really cheap. Like I said, I like to use the legumes, the red beans. I mean, you're looking at $1.50 for a pound of red beans that can feed a family of eight.
Well, let's talk about grilling now. And for some of us, we've been grilling almost through the winter, but others are pulling out their grills right now. What would you suggest as we get into grill season?
Yeah, just, you know, get out there and grill. You know, I always recommend if you're not a grill expert, you know, you don't need to go out there and buy, you know, the $900 Big Green Egg or the Traeger, which those are all good grills. But, you know, just basic, you know, $30, $40, $50 grill. I'd recommend if you have a smaller family, get a smaller grill. Smaller grills are a little bit more easier to manage and maintain. And, you know, just make sure you use that lid. You know, whenever you feel like your grill is getting too hot, put that lid on it, cool it down. Just be cautious with cooking. Grilling is kind of like you know, watching a baby, you know, you're babysitting, you know, it's not something you want to just throw on the grill and walk away and come back 30 minutes later and your meal's done.
Yeah. In terms of checking it and how often we take the cover on and off and thermometers, and I know it depends on what you have on the grill, but what would you suggest in terms of that babysitting?
Yeah, I mean, if you can get a thermometer, you know, that works, you know, definitely fine. I'm from Louisiana. We don't use much thermometers. We pretty much just go by sight, you know. So, you know, the first things first is making sure, you know, you have a good amount of charcoal in there. I always do the pyramid technique, stack them up in a pyramid, then light them so they all kind of light together. And then just making sure you got a good flame. If it seems like you're really not getting any cook, take the lid off, add some more charcoal to it, and then get that nice flame to it. Play around with your little – every grill should have some type of little air compartment to adjust the airflow. So the more you open up that airflow, the hotter it's going to get. So you can kind of play around with the temperature like that. And once you get it set to a pretty good one, then you can kind of relax and kind of have a beer and chill out.
And in terms of getting that charcoal ready to go, how white should it get in there? How hot should it be? And when do you know that your charcoal is ready?
So just barely white.
Barely white. Okay.
Yeah, barely white, just around the rims. If you're like, you know, Santa Claus white, you know, chances are you don't have long before you lose your heat.
All right. What do you like to put on the grill these days? What's fun?
I personally, I love to do ribs. I have this new grill called a Pit Barrel where you can actually, it has poles in it and it comes with hooks. So it actually allows you to hang your racks of ribs.
What?
It's so amazing. You know, because if you put it on the actual grill rack, you know, you still get a good smoke and everything like that. But obviously, you know, it's touching the grill grate. So there's parts that's not going to get that true infusion. But by it hanging, you literally are infusing smoke on every single inch of the ribs or the chicken. Those would be my two favorite. And I love grilling. I'll grill a piece of chicken breast that I will use in a pasta. You know, it doesn't necessarily always have to be grill a chicken breast, put it on the plate, and that's what I'm eating is just the chicken. You can, you know, grill off 10 pieces of chicken breast and, you know, refrigerate a couple of them, freeze a couple of them. And then like what we talked about earlier about making a bunch of different dishes using that chicken. Now you have a chicken breast that's full of smoke and barbecue flavor that people just can't seem to get enough of.
Do you ever use some aluminum foil and do some veggies on the grill, maybe make one of those pockets?
Yeah, you know, you can do the aluminum foil. My best thing that I've learned is using, they call it a grill mat.
Okay.
And that seems to be a lot more universal. You've got to be careful when you kind of ball it up in the aluminum foil because, you know, you want it all to get a good smoky flavor. And if you wrap it up too tight, it cooks it from the heat, but it doesn't really infuse the smoke flavor. You really want those vegetables laid out all nice and flat on a nice level to really make sure you get a good cook on both sides.
What are these mats like? So they go right onto the grill rack?
Yeah, it's kind of like silicone. So it's the same concept of the aluminum foil. You know, the aluminum foil is going to keep the vegetables from falling through the grill plates. Well, so does the grill mat. You know, it literally, and it keeps your grill clean too as well. Now, if you're really like, you know, you just want that true traditional barbecue, you know, vegetables, they're great. But for meats, you know, you want to 86 anything underneath it just simply because you want the smoke to be able to come from both the bottom and the top. And obviously the grill mat would be blocking the bottom.
Okay. So, you know, I know you do ribs, but what other kinds of meat? And I want to go there to fish as well. Do you do any fish on the grill?
I do. Fish to me, it works really, really well if you put it on like some type of cedar plank. Mm. So what you can do is just get that plank, soak it in some water, you know, overnight, and then, you know, just season your fish normally. If you're using salmon, you know, always make sure skin side down and really just allow it to be on a low temperature and get a nice, nice smoke. With fish, the worst thing you can do is have that grill up piping hot on 500 degrees because it'll burn it, dry it up so fast. And, you know, fish, especially salmon, it doesn't take much to dry it out at all.
And it can be so expensive as well. It's an investment, yes. And you want to make sure it comes out just the right way.
Oh, that's the worst. When you mess up a dish, it's like it not only messes with your pride, it messes with your pocketbook too.
We're talking with Ace Champion. He's a private chef and television cooking show host. You can join in. Do you plan to break out the grill this weekend? What do you plan to make? What are your favorite things to grill? And how about your marinades? How do you do those? How do you season your meat? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call now. Jim is joining us from Beaver Dam. Hi, Jim.
Hello, how you doing?
Good.
Awesome. Well, I just wanted to say, okay, so I grill out all the time. And I do those vegetable pockets you were talking about with the tinfoil also?
Yes, yes.
Because I like to use fresh butter in with my vegetables. So a grill plate doesn't really work on that as well. So okay. What I do is, 10 minutes prior to everything being done, I'll slit the tinfoil packet down the middle, the top, and then put the top of, I use a kettle style grill. So I close the air vents on the top for that last 10 minutes. And boy, it brings all the smoke you want in there.
Oh, nice, nice. What temperature do you have your grill at, if you don't mind me asking?
Okay, what I do, I heard what you said, and I've done that most of my life, but here lately what I'm doing, instead of making a pyramid, I rest all the, like, I'd say two or three fist size worth of briquettes to the back side of the grill, away from the vents on the top. And that, I not only do I, you know, what little bit of lighter fluid that I use, I leave it right there. And that way I can have more grill space for my meats so that I don't have that extreme heat. Plus,
awesome. Oh, so he's like actually zoning. Yeah, you're zoning on your grill, I think.
Great advice. Yeah. Great advice. Appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, Jim, thank you. Thank you so much. This is really helpful. So, and I really like the idea of cutting that tinfoil down the center once everything is almost cooked there and opening up so you got that more of that smoky flavor coming in.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're in the kitchen this hour with Green Bay private chef Ace Champion, who's planning meals, helping us cook at home right now. It's group effort. Have your kids been experimenting and trying out recipes in the kitchen? Mine have. How is that going? And the cleanup. Please tell us your shortcuts for keeping your kitchen organized and tidy. I want to hear all of it. All of it. 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll be back with Ace Champion in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. So work, school, home life, all in flux now. So we're talking about cooking with expert advice from Chef Ace Champion. He's giving our meals a boost, recipe ideas along the way. Let's take another call now. Doris is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Doris.
Hi.
How's your rice?
It's terrible. I started out rinsing my rice, and that takes a lot of water. And then I'm like, oh, my gosh. And so then I use one cup of rice with 2 cups of water, and I've cut the water down, and I've tried just leaving the rice on a hot pan, trying to dry the rice out again after I rinse it, but it still comes out like mush balls. I don't know how to not make it mush balls.
I got you. Rice happens to be my specialty. So, a couple of things I would recommend. One, a rice cooker does wonders. You can get one online for about $20 and they last a lifetime. Two, rinsing your rice is correct. Pay attention next time you buy your rice and make sure you get long grain rice. A lot of times, you know, when I was growing up, I didn't know the difference. I'd grab short grain rice. Well, any short grain rice that you get is automatically going to be sticky. It's actually made to be sticky. That's actually the rice they use for sushi. So make sure that you get long grain rice. And then another technique that I found helpful is instead of making it in a traditional, you know, kind of, you know, stock pot type deal, do it in a large skillet. When you do it in a large skillet, you allow all the rice kernels to kind of cook by themselves versus in a traditional pot. What happens is the rice cooks on top of each other. So you end up with gummy on the bottom, nice on the top. So I sometimes we'll use a little bit of chicken broth, you know, if you want to add some flavor to your rice, but cook that on like a nice medium. Your ratio is about right. And then I would say probably about, you know, if you're cooking your rice for 20 minutes, probably about 8 minutes into it, put a lid on it and turn it on low, 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 and then allow that steam and that condensation to finish that. You know, don't put the lid on right away. Allow some of that water to kind of condense down and then put that lid on it. And then just turn the stove off and just let the rice just sit there. If it ever seems like you still have some water in there, just turn it back on low, put that lid, make sure you give it a good nice stir, and that should solve your problems.
Ah, Doris.
Okay. Oh, that sounds so much better. Thank you very much.
Doris, thank you. Let's go to Kevin in Richland Center now. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. This happened this last, it was Christmas. I thought it was Thanksgiving. It was Christmas. But just for the kind of a fluke kind of thing, I had some cranberry sauce off to the side. And I kind of thought, well, I'm going to put this cranberry sauce with this pumpkin pie. Oh, you ought to try that. And then my idea was to go to just a regular pumpkin pie and put a glaze of cranberry sauce over the top of the pumpkin pie and see what people think. Now, there's other things you could put with that, too. I thought, like, maybe some chocolate shavings or a little bit on the top or just whipped cream. But just try the combination with going back to the standard pumpkin pie and put cranberry sauce on it, either just cold from the can, the jelly type, or some other mixture for a recipe for a dessert to kind of spice up. You'd be surprised what cranberries will do to pumpkin pie.
Ooh, that sounds amazing.
And yeah, that just sparked something when you said that. Oh, go ahead.
Just like, wait a minute. I got eight sisters, and I've got two other brothers. I called my sisters about it after I tasted it, and I shared it with my aunt and some other people, and I don't know, but I happened to turn the program on it because I was going to listen to Milk Street, but I thought, you know what, I just turned it up. I'm gonna call you guys.
Well, it sounds like it sounds like that was a crowd pleaser there. So, Ace, what is your inspiration off of that?
So it automatically came to me when you said that. I know you're saying putting the glaze on there, but how about you try next time taking that cranberry sauce and just kind of melting it down in the pot, you know, until where it becomes in the liquid form, and then, you know, kind of pouring it over the pumpkin pie, almost like a drizzle or like a sauce, like, you know, and that way it'll be nice and smooth and you still same flavor, you know, just slightly different form.
Well, Kevin, thanks so much for calling in.
The combination is just awesome. Okay, thanks for
thanks. It's awesome. A great combination. Well, when he says cranberry sauce, too, I also think of wild rice to go with that. We have, you know, just about 30 seconds here, but how do you prepare your wild rice and make it come out right?
So, like I said, I always do that large skillet, you know, and I get the pre-mixed wild rice. You know, it still takes about 25 to 30 minutes on there versus the traditional, it's good, but I find it even more pleasing when you can do that blend, you know, with a little bit of long grain rice and the wild rice too as well. And like I said, I use chicken broth instead of water. That's going to give it a ton of flavor, and that way you don't have to dump a bunch of salt in there.
Well, Ace, thank you so much for joining us. Stay well.
My pleasure. Yeah, and make sure, you know, you guys can check out my new virtual reality cooking experience. Check out my Facebook.
We'll see you online. Absolutely. Ace Champion is a private chef and television cooking show host. Now, for many, the new coronavirus pandemic is having more of an effect on their financial well-being than their health. 1 in 10 Americans are out of work, and perhaps no industry has been hit harder than restaurants and bars. Corrine Hess has more.
In a video taken at Odd Duck on a Saturday night, the kitchen at the popular Milwaukee restaurant is busy. Chefs are preparing carryout orders, but the dining room has been empty for weeks. The state ordered all Wisconsin restaurants and bars closed on March 17th to help prevent the spread of the new coronavirus. Though Wisconsin Restaurant Association says at least half of the state's establishments have shut their doors completely during the pandemic. Others, like Odd Duck, began offering carryout services.
Which was hard for us because we don't normally do it at all. We don't have the infrastructure. We literally didn't have bags or to-go boxes. We had to rewrite the whole menu to something that would work for carryout.
That's Melissa Buchholz, owner of Odd Duck. She says business is down 70%, but for now, they're holding on. Odd Duck normally has 36 employees. Now they've got 14. They self-isolate to stay healthy and to keep the restaurant running.
It literally feels like you're a failure every moment of every day, but you have to tell yourself that's a win, considering the circumstances.
Odd Duck has created a pantry to feed the workers, and the tips the working employees are given are donated to those who have been laid off from the restaurant. Even operating at 30%, Buchholz considers herself lucky. The restaurant has been in business for 8 years. It's established and has good cash flow. It's out of debt.
If this had happened to us in our year two of business, we would not even be standing at this point.
Christine Hilmer heads the Wisconsin Restaurant Association. She says even restaurants who are open for carryout have seen a reduction in revenue between 50 and 70%. And when the pandemic ends, as many as half of the state's restaurants could permanently close.
Some have just decided to close their doors for right now and hoping that they're going to be open. But again, the longer it goes, the less likely that's going to be.
Some restaurants have tried to convert to carryout, but stopped after a few weeks. That's what happened at Bounce Milwaukee, a restaurant and inflatable sports arena. Becky Cooper Clancy is the owner. She says March is usually one of Bounce's busiest months, but this year, sales were down 80%.
And it just completely knocked the wind out of us.
Clancy and her partner quickly put together a restructuring plan.
We had to make decisions, basically, where we were deciding, like, what's good for the business or what's good for the employee. So we decided we needed to prioritize taking care of our employees.
A small staff briefly remained for carryout orders, but now most employees are furloughed, given severance packages and promised jobs when the economy is better. In early April, small businesses could begin applying for loans and grants contained in the $2 trillion federal stimulus package known as the CARES Act. Buchholz says owners need clear guidance, bridge loans, and financial support for their staff.
We are really busy trying to save our businesses. We don't have time to slog through like millions of miles of paperwork and websites. And we just need to know what to do to get back on our feet, to make it through this so that we can come out the other side as strong as ever.
Tony Marquez is the owner of La Estacion in Waukesha, which is trying to survive by offering carryout. He says he doesn't know how he's going to pay for the restaurant or his personal bills. Often, he doesn't sleep at night.
We didn't create this. We were working, running our businesses, and next thing you know, the carpet is moved from underneath our feet, and we are left out in the sea. If you can swim, swim. If you can't, you can't.
The safer at home order has been extended for now, but is already facing a legal challenge. How many restaurant owners can swim and how many can't will largely depend on how quickly the state economy restarts. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And this is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.